This is a Triple J podcast.
Hack. Hey, it's Dave Marchese. This is the Hack Podcast. It's efficient. It's reliable. It's already being used around the world. Or it's dangerous, too expensive. It's going to take way too long to set up. Nuclear power. The debate's been raging for decades. Do we or don't we? We're getting right into nuclear energy on this podcast because you might have heard it's shaping up to be a massive election issue. The Coalition's putting it forward as part of its plan for Australia's energy future. So we're going to hear some different opinions, including the take of a high school student who's advocating hard on this and reckons young Aussies are ready and wanting nuclear power. So what's your take?
Hack.
Why doesn't Australia have nuclear power?
On Triple J.
Yeah, you've been seeing the headlines a lot over the past couple of weeks mentioning nuclear power. Opposition leader Peter Dutton saying this should be considered for Australia's future. It's going to help us reach our climate goals. We've got resources that would help us get this underway. Other countries are doing it successfully. The government doesn't agree, though. In fact, they've been ridiculing the opposition over this. Experts have been weighing in too. It is a very big issue, and everyone's got a different take, different argument. So where are we up to? What has been announced? Ariana Lucente has this update.
Is it time for Australia to go nuclear?
We need to have a mature conversation about nuclear.
That's right. The coalition parties, that's the Liberals, the Nationals and the LNP in Queensland, are bringing the possibility of nuclear energy back on the table. Peter Dutton reckons it's part of the coalition strategy to achieve net zero emissions by 2050.
It's the latest technology that has zero emissions and it can firm up renewables in the system.
Hold up a sec. What is nuclear power? Well, basically, it's the use of nuclear reactions to create electricity. A process of splitting the nucleus of an atom called fission releases heat, which can be converted into electricity in a nuclear power plant. It's commonly done using uranium, which Australia happens to have a lot of. Now, for a long time, most of Australia's electricity has come from coal, with gas as a backup. We've never had a nuclear power plant. But now that we're on our way to phasing down coal, the question is, what's going to replace it?
Australia has the best renewable resources in the world.
As you can hear, the Climate Change and Energy Minister Chris Bowen isn't into this nuclear idea. Labor says its focus is on renewable energy, specifically solar panels and wind farms, because it says it's cheapest. But it will still require upgrades to the energy grid. Upgrades that are expensive and will take some time.
You don't have to adopt the government's policy, which is to build 28,000 kilometres of new poles and wires, including through national parks and across pristine farming land.
The coalition is yet to reveal its full policy on nuclear, but says it's interested in turning old coal plants into nuclear reactor sites.
If there's a retiring coal asset, so there's a coal-fired generator, that's already got an existing distribution network, the wires and poles are already there.
That narrows the possible regions for a nuclear reactor to about 7 locations across the country. Places where retiring coal plants are going to close in the next 20 years. But right now, there's a total ban on nuclear energy in Australia.
Well, let's remove the ban and let's the market decide.
Another problem is we'd be starting from scratch. How long will it take to get a nuclear reactor up and running? The Shadow Minister for Climate Change and Energy, Ted O'Brien, says 10 years. But Chris Bowen is not so sure.
Tell him he's dreaming. Ted O'Brien thinks you can do it in Australia from 10 with a standing start, with no regulations, with it banned not only nationally but in the 3 most populous states. I mean, throw in the Opera House and the Harbour Bridge and you might sell him something.
And then there's the cost.
I look forward as well to him arguing where the financing will come for such reactors, whether they will be, taxpayers will be expected to pay for this.
Hack on Triple J.
Ariana Lucente with that update. Well, let's get a bit of a different take on this now. Right now we've got the opposition's energy spokesperson with us to talk through. Ted O'Brien, thank you very much for coming on Hack.
Great to be with you, Dave.
Coalition was in government for 8 years, the Abbott government, the Turnbull government, the Morrison government. That's a lot of time to embrace nuclear energy or get started on some of these reactors. Why now?
Well, actually, in the last term of government, we made enormous strides on this very issue, Dave. I'm proud of the fact that we ran a very large parliamentary inquiry that was looking into whether or not Australia could adopt next-generation zero-emissions nuclear energy. And I chaired that parliamentary inquiry, and we reached the conclusion that, indeed, Australia should be looking at this, but not as nuclear on its own. The answer, really, as we've seen across the world, is to have a balanced mix of technologies. Now, that means renewables, and it does mean zero emissions nuclear energy.
Right. So you're
and
not.
And then in this term of government, of course, we progress that even further.
So you're not against renewables being part of the mix, to make that clear, but you think nuclear needs to be used to complement that.
Yeah, spot on, David. And this is one of the sort of the annoying parts of sometimes the Australian debate, that people will try to pit one technology against each other. But one of the things I've learned as I've studied this across the world is the countries that are decarbonising, they're cleaning up their grid and they're providing cheap electricity, are the ones that say technologies can work together.
Okay.
And that's why we're taking what we call an all-of-the-above approach to say getting to net zero is going to be so challenging as a nation. What we can't afford to do is leave any technology off
right.
the table for consideration.
Okay. What we have to address, though, is the time issue, because, you know, the coalition has said a decade we could have things up and running. That's been disputed. Experts have come out and said that's not possible.
Well, I mean, Australia's number one expert body on nuclear energy, the government's own body, in fact, they recognise that for small modular reactors, it's around about, you know, 3 to 5 years. That's just the construction. I mean, you have to set up a regulator beforehand.
I guess the issue is, though, with those small modular reactors, we still don't have evidence around them, around the world, of them up and running, and the idea's there, but we don't have the actual evidence. So people are saying, experts are saying, we need to be considering the time to build the bigger reactors?
Oh, look, we need as a country to be open-minded to an extent. And when I say to an extent, Dave, we should not be considering old Soviet era technology. We should only be looking at new technology, the latest next generation designs, whether that be the micro reactors, whether that be the small modular reactors or the next generation larger ones. But it's got to be the modern designs, because they are the ones that are proving to decarbonize economies at great speed. In fact, you know, 5 of the top 10 fastest decarbonizations in history are due to nuclear energy. And that is why, as a country, with all the argy-bargy about climate change in Australia, at least we've got a bipartisan goal of reaching net zero by 2050. The question, therefore, becomes, how do we get to 2050? How do we do that? Now, my political opponents, Labor, are taking us down one pathway.
Right.
And we all see what's happening. The prices are through the roof. We're paying among the highest prices in the world.
Can I?
Renewables have stalled. And this is the problem. The lights are going to go out, and we're putting together an alternative pathway.
Okay, so you've got your plan here. What I have to ask you, though, is there are some experts that are investing heavily and into nuclear power, into these small modular reactors. Bill Gates, billionaire, one of them. He loves the idea. He's putting his money into it. But even he says Australia should be focusing on wind and solar, not on nuclear energy. So if you've got people who are fully putting their money where their mouth is, also saying Australia really shouldn't be going down that path, how do you justify it?
Well, Dave, I mean, I have personally invested my time and, to be honest, a little bit of money too, to travel and learn from the experts around the world. I have sat down in person in 10 different countries that have nuclear energy. I've spoken to departments, I've seen their modelling, and what is crystal clear is, one, there is no credible pathway to reach net zero unless you have nuclear in the mix. I mean, John Kerry, who is the climate envoy for the United States, made that crystal clear at COP last year where I attended. And so you can't get to net zero without it. Secondly, the countries that have nuclear have lower power prices. We know when I was in Canada just over a year ago, the province of Ontario, they have between 50 and 60% nuclear energy. Their grid is 10 times cleaner and their households pay half the price as Australians do.
And how many government subsidies would be required to get to that level is the question, because it's easy to say, oh, the power prices, their bills are cheaper in Ontario, but, you know, a lot of government investment and money went into that. Is that what we would expect here in Australia, the subsidies to be huge?
Well, there's no doubt it depends on which country you look at. The government plays different roles. The private sector plays different roles. The way that I'm looking at this, you know, acknowledging we haven't yet released our policy, of course, but nevertheless, it doesn't matter what type of big infrastructure you are looking at for energy as we move forward. There is an important role for government.
Right.
As there is today, right? I mean, you know, the government today has, they've announced this capacity investment scheme. It's expected it's going to be costing Australia literally tens of billions of dollars.
Well, look, Ted O'Brien.
And they haven't announced how much. So, you know, there's always a role for government.
We're going to have to leave it there, unfortunately. We've
no,
run
not
out
at all,
of time.
Dave. I appreciate the opportunity. Great to chat to you.
Opposition spokesperson on climate change and energy, Ted O'Brien there. Look, let's get more analysis on this issue. And we've got an expert with us, a renewable energy and energy systems analyst from UNSW. Dylan McConnell is with us. Dr. Dylan McConnell, thank you very much for coming on Hack.
Yeah, no worries.
You've heard the Coalition's argument for nuclear energy in Australia. They've been out talking about it over the past few weeks. In your opinion, does it stack up?
Look, there's a couple of elements to their plan that don't make a lot of sense in the context of the Australian energy transition. Yeah, they range from cost to timelines and political feasibility. So there's quite a range of challenges to nuclear power in Australia.
So what are your hesitations with nuclear power? Is it more the safety aspect? Is it the cost, the time? What's the drawback from your perspective?
Yeah, look, I'm not personally too worried about the safety aspects of the technology. All technologies have their own costs and risks. That includes renewables and coal, for that matter. You know, climate change and emissions are a big issue there. But yeah, the challenges are really around being able to deliver low-cost, clean power to our energy system on timescales that are relevant to addressing the climate crisis. And for that matter, the exit of coal-fired power stations, an aging fleet of coal-fired power stations that are retiring, that need replacing now. And basically the timelines involved in setting up a nuclear industry, not to mention the costs, are not really compatible with those timelines.
Right, because the Coalition has been out there saying we could have nuclear power up and running within a decade in Australia. You're saying that's not feasible.
Look, we'd be extremely lucky to have, you know, a kilowatt hour of energy from a nuclear power before the 2040s. That's the sort of timelines we're talking about. If we look at international experience, it is possible to construct a nuclear power plant in those sort of timelines, but that's in established nuclear industries. We don't have an established nuclear industry. We don't have the legal frameworks or the regulatory frameworks. You know, we would have to start from scratch to establish a nuclear industry here, and then we would have to go through the process of actually building one. That's when you actually start getting to the issue of the costs. So that's, you know, an important element of this is that this is actually quite an expensive technology, and certainly much more expensive than the alternatives that we currently have today.
What do you think of this idea of having nuclear power at the sites of retired coal generators? Because that's something that the opposition's really pushing at the moment. Is that a good idea?
Look, on face value or surface level, that does seem sensible. But again, there is a time factor here. Like, we have, these plants are leaving now. We had a coal plant retire in New South Wales last year. We have another one planned to retire next year. And these assets are quite valuable and are being used for other purposes. They're basically putting batteries in here. So the idea that these are going to be actually available for nuclear power, you know, in 15 years' time is somewhat contestable, because we are actually already doing things today to these sites.
Peter Dutton has been out in the past saying the cost of building a new grid for renewable energy would be huge, and that's the reason why we should consider nuclear, because he said it could blow out to more than $1 trillion if we were to invest money into building this grid for renewable energy. Is that right?
Yeah, that's a significant exaggeration of costs estimated by the market operator. I don't know where that $1 trillion figure comes from, but certainly it's an order of magnitude higher than, at least an order of magnitude higher than estimates from our market operator and planner.
One of the other arguments points towards other countries and their success with nuclear energy, because obviously there are nations around the world who rely on nuclear power for a huge amount of their energy. The UAE is one country the coalition's pointed to, saying they've been able to set up something really quickly. Is there a bit of a danger in comparing ourselves to other countries when it comes to energy?
Yeah, so the idea that that has been quick is also contested. They decided to go nuclear in about 2006 or 2007. It took them another 5 years to set up their regulatory framework. And then they started construction in 2012, and they've just now finishing off the final unit. That's a pretty long lead time. I think a more important issue or more important question in that example is essentially, what is the relevance of UAE to Australia in 2024? You know, we're talking about an autocratic regime, which has a very different political system. Keeping in mind, you know, we have a federation. Not only would you have to overturn the ban at a federal level, you would have to do this at the state level too. In all of the main states, nuclear is banned. And realistically, you'd need bipartisan support in order for these things to be financeable. You need stable political environments to finance nuclear, because they are such long-lived and expensive assets. Achieving that in Australia basically would require bipartisan support at a federal and state level.
Right. So you're saying no one's going to want to invest in this if there's not bipartisan support, if the government and the opposition don't agree, because at any point the policy could change and then all of the money that had been invested into setting something up could be down the drain.
That's exactly right. Or the alternative is that maybe they would invest, but they would extract a significant risk premium because of that possibility, which then makes it even more expensive.
You're listening to Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with Dylan McConnell, a renewable energy and energy systems analyst at UNSW, about nuclear energy. We've heard from the coalition about their plan for nuclear power in Australia. Now we're getting a bit more analysis. Dylan, can you take us through some of the other countries in the world that do rely on nuclear energy?
Yeah, so most famously, there's France. About 65% of their energy comes from nuclear. There's about 30 other countries in the world that have nuclear at various penetrations, but most of those are, you know, certainly well below France, in the sort of 30% or below range. I think it's probably important to point out that quite a lot of these countries haven't built new nuclear plants in a long time, or a handful have been built, you know, since the turn of the century. Basically, in the Western world, we've had 5 new plants, and there's actually none under construction in the United States as of now. And the ones that we have seen in Europe have come at significant cost and delay.
What about these SMRs, small modular reactors, that we hear are much cheaper, quicker to set up? Are there any drawbacks with those? Where's the technology at with SMRs?
Yeah, so the promise and hope of SMRs is that they will be modular and, you know, essentially able to be produced on production lines from factories. It's essentially trying to mimic some of the success of the renewable energy industry, getting economies of scale through mass production. And that sort of idea, that SMR, a modular reactor built in factories idea, has not happened yet. The best we have is a couple of sort of plans or proposals in the United States, but they are very far from that idea of sort of factory-lined production of, you know, small modular reactors. And one of the more high-profile ones actually fell over late last year because its costs sort of blew out. Yeah, at the moment, they are still very much in development or prospective.
Well, it's great to get some context in all of this. I really appreciate you explaining it all to us. Dr. Dylan McConnell, thank you very much for joining us on Hack.
No worries.
And still heaps of messages coming through on this, people for and against, some of the for ones. Someone says, I really agree with the Liberals' policy, but this is on point. Nuclear is the stopgap to a clean future. Daniel in Nam says, the cost of nuclear is almost all up front. Renewables need triple capacity plus storage, a lot more land. They don't last nearly as long. And Matt in Bega says, nuclear energy is a no-brainer. But then someone on the other side says, the waste. How to deal with the nuclear waste? It's so dangerous and there's no good way to deal with with it. Another person, lower energy bill, higher tax bill by the sounds of it. And someone else says, what's wrong with the sun and wind? They've still got to mine uranium for nuclear. A lot of questions as well about previous disasters that have happened, whether it's Fukushima or Chernobyl, people having a bit of understanding of the massive, massive issues around those points in history. This has always been a really controversial topic in Australia. Shalala Medora takes a look on the history of nuclear energy to explain why.
Brace yourself, because we're going back in time. Way back to the 1950s, when Australia built its first and only nuclear reactor at Lucas Heights in Sydney's Sutherlandshire. It isn't used for power though, mostly for research and medical purposes.
Many countries are cooperating in research, and Australia will now be able to make its contribution.
Politicians have been debating nuclear energy for decades. In 1969, PM John Gorton proposed a power station in Jervis Bay on the south coast of New South Wales.
One word sums up the entire industry: energy. Energy from nuclear fission.
It was scrapped due to cost in 1971. Later that decade, the WA government proposed a nuclear power plant in Perth. That didn't go ahead either. By the 1980s, the anti-nuclear movement had taken hold, mostly due to the global spread of nuclear weapons during the Cold War between America and the Soviet Union, and also concerns around the environmental impact of nuclear waste.
If we do not march, and if we do not protest, if we don't care enough to do these things, it can appear that we are tacitly supporting the nuclear arms race.
The public was angry that the British government tested nuclear weapons on Aussie soil for years, and also about French testing in the Pacific. The Nuclear Disarmament Party even won a seat in the 1984 federal election.
Western Australia's Joe Valentine, Senator-elect.
The 1980s also saw the adoption of PM Bob Hawke's Three Mines policy, which stopped any new uranium mines from being built in Australia, but let existing ones operate.
Shame on shame! Shame on shame!
And more people joined the anti-nuclear movement after the Chernobyl disaster in Ukraine in 1986, the worst nuclear disaster the world has seen.
Soviet officials admit this central area is still heavily contaminated.
But times change.
I want a full-blooded debate in Australia about this issue.
John Howard scrapped the Three Mines policy when he became Prime Minister in 1996. 2 years later, he expanded the function of the Lucas Heights reactor, but needed a deal with the Greens to get that through Parliament. The deal was to stop any new nuclear plants in Australia.
Nuclear power is potentially the cleanest and the greenest of them all.
In 2006, John Howard commissioned an inquiry into uranium mining and nuclear energy.
And it is foolish and backward-looking and old-fashioned of people to say, well, we will always oppose the use of nuclear power.
That inquiry said Australia would be able to build a power station in 10 years that would bring down greenhouse gas emissions. Sounds familiar.
The countryside is choked with smoke from fires that burned all night long.
But momentum for nuclear power faced a major setback in 2011 when an earthquake and tsunami resulted in a major nuclear disaster in Fukushima, Japan.
More than 400 are dead, almost 1,000 still missing.
In the aftermath, Germany announced it would get out of nuclear power altogether. Its last nuclear plant closed last year. But maybe, with the coalition's latest policy, Australia could go in a different direction.
Hack on Triple J.
Yeah, Shalala Medora, with a bit of the history of nuclear power in Australia, across the world as well. It's not just older people banging on about this, though. It's not all history. Younger generations are proving to be keen to discuss this as well. I can tell on the text line, you're all wanting to have your say. And one of Australia's most passionate advocates for nuclear power is a 17-year-old. His name's William Shackle. He's in year 12, and he's the founder of Australia's youth-led campaign for nuclear energy, Nuclear for Australia. He's with us now. G'day, Will. Thanks for coming on Hack.
Thanks for having me on.
Will, do you think young people in Australia have a very different view to nuclear energy than older generations?
I think it's a bit more nuanced to that, because generally we're not taught about nuclear power in school. I had to stumble across it myself, and I think that's an experience probably shared by many in my generation. But I think when young people learn about nuclear power, there's a great curiosity towards it. They see it as a source of power which has incredibly low carbon emissions and also has such high reliability. And I think that really fascinates young people, especially those who are interested in sciences. So I think compared to past generations, which might have viewed nuclear through, you know, the scare campaigns and fear-mongering associated with Chernobyl and even Fukushima to a certain extent, young people are able to have a fresh perspective on nuclear power. And it's why so many young people like myself are calling for the bans on nuclear power to be lifted in Australia.
So Will, what about, like, safety aside, the concerns around the cost of setting up nuclear power, but also the time it's going to take? Because there's a lot of dispute, as we've just been hearing on Hack, there's a lot of dispute about these elements of it. And a lot of experts are saying it's not possible to get it up and running within a decade. Shouldn't we be focusing everything on renewables?
Look, I'm not someone who opposes renewables. I think that renewables should lead the energy transition, but that's no reason for why we shouldn't be able to consider nuclear. First of all, in terms of the cost of nuclear power reactors, obviously, they are expensive, but that is a long-term investment in Australia's future. Nuclear power stations can last anywhere from 60 to 100 years. That is an investment that we would be making in Australia to help address our carbon emissions and increase our energy reliability and lower our power bills in the future for young people if we made that decision today.
Will, what about the Coalition's plan then? You must be stoked to see that this is a massive priority. The opposition leader, Peter Dutton's putting it out there. Was it a surprise for you?
I think it is a surprise, because the Coalition were in power for 10 years and they did nothing to advance the issue of nuclear power in a genuine way. We need to see people from the Labor government and also from the Greens Party also standing up and supporting nuclear power in agreement with their constituents, because as we know, a majority of voters from all political parties actually do support nuclear power, according to the most recent polls. So if those politicians are serious about the science and serious about listening to their constituents, then they would embrace nuclear power.
And Will, I mean, those people out there who are going, well, he's still in high school. What does he know about this? Why is he out there advocating so hard? How do you cop that criticism? Because, you know, like, journalists have been writing about your take on this and how strong you're pushing for nuclear power. Some saying, oh, we love the passion, but he doesn't know what he's talking about. How do you deal with that?
Well, I think whenever this is one of the most complicated debates you could possibly enter, and I'm very, very mindful of that. And I do not believe people should take my word as gospel. But what I have done is I've reached out to experts. I'm collaborating with experts. Currently, the chair of my organisation, Nuclear for Australia, is Dr. Adie Patterson. He is probably one of the most respected experts in Australia when it comes to nuclear power. So I've made it my goal because obviously I'm on this mission myself, trying to learn about nuclear power. And I've been partnering with really respected experts in Australia in order to do that. So I would say, don't listen to me, listen to the experts and learn about nuclear power for yourself, because when you look to the evidence around the world, it's abundantly clear that countries which have embraced nuclear power and have had it as an option only benefit from that decision.
All right, Will Shackle, thank you very much for joining us on Hack.
Thanks for having me.
Hack on Triple J.
Really fired up the audience, this topic, no pun intended. We've got someone pro-nuclear saying, spend the money, do it properly. Another person, though, against, Sarah in Redfern. It drives me nuts. Every time the LNP brings up nuclear, it's expensive, generates waste, and it's going to take years to build when renewables are cheaper, cleaner, and readily available. And someone else saying, nuclear waste is a real problem. It's way too expensive. And if something goes wrong, we're all up the creek. Definitely something we'll be hearing more about in the months ahead as we get closer to the election, as these energy policies start to be rolled out with a bit more detail. We don't know too much at this stage, but that is all we've got time for on the Hack Podcast for now. I'll catch you next time. See ya. Hack.